Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
It's a beautiful day in Brooklyn, and you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and in 2 weeks, it will also hopefully be a beautiful weekend, because we're going to have the Food Book Fair, which is coming to Brooklyn for its fifth year, and to kind of tease that out, I'm really pleased to be joined by its two co-directors. They are Amanda Dell. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having us.
And Kimberly Cho. Hi.
Hi. Hello.
So you guys are no strangers here to Heritage. We've been fans of yours now for the past 5 years that the Food Book Fair has been going. It's a very unique festival, and it's definitely up my alley. As you guys know, this show is about food and media and words and literature and food and books. But a lot of the times when I tell people that, they're like, oh, so it's a cookbook show. And I try to say, well, you know, there's other categories. There's like, you know, there's farming, you know, there's food policy, there's fiction, you know, people who are writing fiction about food and memoirs and so forth. So I'm curious how you guys kind of summarize and categorize what entails the food books at the Food Book Fair.
Yeah, I mean, I think more recently we've been using a really pithy and flattering line that someone wrote about us in LA Weekly, thank you, a few years ago, that says, describes Food Book Fair as the Coachella of writing about eating. And, you know, however you feel about Coachella, I think using the phrase writing about eating makes it...
That sounds a lot somehow more fun, more, too.
Yeah, I like the...
I should call my show something a little bit more badass. Like, this is the Howard Stern of talking about food.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds more fun than the people who are actually
at Coachella.
The devil
eats at Jean Georges.
Right now.
We're wearing flower crowns in the studio right now.
Can it be the Burning Man of... Can I have the Burning Man of food radio. And writing? Okay. Yeah, I'll take that
Someone,
one.
We'll write that on our blog.
I gotta get decked out, though. I gotta work on my little tent.
Yeah.
Okay.
But so we're writing, we describe it as a festival about writing about eating. And then if we need to spiel from there, we generally do. But I feel like that somehow, without having the word book there, people don't automatically jump to cookbooks, which when you say food and book, immediately they go, oh, cookbooks. Which cookbooks are a very big part of what we are inspired by. You know, authors of cookbooks speak at our event. We have cookbook signings. We cook from books for our conceptual literary dinners. But, you know, as you said, it's food fiction, memoir, political writing about food. Food Book Fair started as a project out of the food studies program at NYU, where the founder of Food Book Fair, Elizabeth, who we took over the fair from this past year, she was a grad student there, and there's a very strong activist bent to what they do. So there's always been a very strong... interest in melding discussion about food culture, the trend side of things,
the industry,
with food systems, and that's always been very important. And I'm talking about food systems change and food access, and issues greater than, you know, who's making what kind of kale salad and how, but connecting it to who can buy kale, what happens when there's a strong interest in kale. What happens when kale is...
It does change the whole landscape around it. And so, now we see books about kale.
People say all the time, something, something. We were just at another event where people kept saying, something is the new kale.
I mean, like, a lot of the panels that at least I've been to in the past, you wouldn't necessarily know it's the festival is, you know, like, kind of hinges around food and media and books. Because I remember one, like, explosive panel about GMO. Oh, yeah. That discussion was amazing. There was, like, actual, like, people standing up and shouting in the audience. But it was a really important discussion at the time, mm-hmm. and obviously it's still a very heated discussion today. It's only gotten more traction. But anyway, that's, like, just one example of, you know, how this festival is taking on, like, the biggest challenges and some of, you know, just the greater, I guess, the wider food concerns.
Yeah, I mean, I think we try to draw inspiration and build our program on contemporary issues, contemporary food issues mm-hmm. that are in contemporary food conversation and all the ways in media in which they're documented from books and beyond. We always tried to have a book and media tie as much as possible. I think before we've definitely programmed panel discussions or talks or other things where there was less of a tie. Mm-hmm. And I think how we differentiate ourselves from other events is that there is that tie and we're really trying to reinforce that.
Oh, yeah.
But and one of the things about, mm-hmm. you know, it having to, we call it Food Book Fair, but it having to draw from more than just food books is, the rate of conversation and the change of conversation is so much faster than the book publishing schedule, to be mm-hmm. realistic. Because someone can be tweeting about something or throwing up a story on, you know, a website or on an online magazine that much faster than, you know, the year and a half, 2 years it takes mm-hmm. to publish a book on a single subject. Though it's important to us to tie things to books and think about books as sort of like a capstone in conversation. So, you know, that's something we discuss.
And, like, on a practical level, it brings people together. It brings those leaders out there and authors and under the same roof. But not in, like, a trade show, you know, normal book festival sort of way that is kind of all over the place in top topics, let's say. So, I don't know. What panels, what topics, what events are you guys looking forward to this year exploring at the fair?
We're doing a couple new things this year, which are very exciting. One of them is the return of children's programming.
Oh, cool.
Food Book Fair Junior.
Yes.
Will be happening in the Wythe Hotel Garden. Mm-hmm. And we have an amazing lineup of authors who will be reading. And also Amy Virginia Buchanan will be musically styling for the kids live there, and the Grow NYC, the Green Market, is going to come and do seed necklaces and composting.
Oh my god!
So that's really fun.
You're never too. It's never too early to learn about food systems.
Can I go?
Definitely. It's for food nerds of all ages. Everyone is welcome. And also, you know, we had a, you know, a kind of think this year about, you know, what we can do that was maybe a little bit more literal, and how we can take some of the people that we were really impressed with and kind of harness their knowledge and share that. So we're doing some more workshops mm-hmm. where people can really get their hands dirty. And that has been really incredibly well received. So we're excited to do something really fun, which is a cocktail class with Annie Novak.
Nice.
Who is just released her book, The Rooftop Growing Guide.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to work with Sam Anderson from Mission Chinese, and they're going to do a class about what kind of cocktails you can make with things that you can grow and who in, you know, an urban environment. So
yeah. And it's a hands-on, like, interactive, like, I mean, like, oh, you can yeah. drink during that.
You make it, you drink it.
Just checking.
But yeah. It's sort of, I mean, I think their thing is very much, and I think this is why what she does is so important, is talking about, to quote the artist Andy Goldsworthy, that we are nature.
Mm-hmm.
Though sometimes in a city you can forget that. And I think Definitely. That's something that's so magical about Eagle Street Rooftop yeah. Farms, which she runs, is that you look up and there's a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And this class is
it's
sort
powerful.
Of about reminding right. you and or telling you if you don't know like how to find that.
Right. And even if you just have one pot growing in your windowsill of an herb, there's still things that you can make with it.
I do.
Yay.
Perfect time of year for that, too. I'm going to take on some boozy tricks from that
I
one.
I think the class will cover a lot more than that, too.
Yes.
I don't know. Annie and Sam, if you're listening to this now, we're getting this totally wrong. I still hope that people get really excited about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's talk about foodioticals, because this is like the festival of food zines or whatever. And you guys sort of coined the term foodioticals.
Yeah, it's a portmanteau of the word food and the word periodical. It's a 2013 word that Eater.com banned, except
when we use it.
Foodioticals?
Yeah.
Why?
Foodioticals was a banned word.
I think they thought it was twee and clunky.
But it's acceptable when
like
we use it, so
clock.
We do.
People hate the word foodie, too,
so
that's it.
Right.
Yeah.
But the name stuck.
Yeah.
It's really stuck.
We're stuck with it.
And let's just say the genre, whatever you want to call it, of food periodicals is growing. It's like, it's enormous. Like, so you guys started out with like how many magazines that came?
I want to say like 15.
15, right. So like maybe like put an egg on it.
Diner Journal.
There we go.
The OGs.
Yeah.
Gather. And now there's like hundreds.
It's pretty amazing. And they're all so different and so inspiring and so, in my opinion, ultra creative.
Mm-hmm.
And just like looking at what, you know, an idea that someone had that they brought to life is, it's so fascinating to me. And, you know, it's, some of them are just so beautiful. That is just so
exciting. What are some of those new ones that are, you mentioned you got some more foodioticals that are coming from like all corners of the country to show their
I'm right here in Brooklyn.
Yeah. We have this one called Ounce Magazine, produced by this illustrator and artist named Leslie Wang. She's originally from Taipei. But she is also splits her time between there and Lisbon. She was working out of Bolivia for a while, and she does these incredible all hand illustrated city guides. Which give you an insider's look on different cities through what's most important.
That's
is what to eat and what to drink. So she's doing one for New York, and she'll be here with us. And then we have Render, which is a feminist food quarterly out of Portland, and they're running a Kickstarter right now, so you guys should all pledge to
Render
to support feminist food media.
Sweet.
So they'll be joining us, and we've been really excited about what they've been doing, so that'll be cool. Life and Time, which is huge. They're out of LA, and this is the first time. So they've been... they started an incredible... web-only publication in 2012, and last year they started printing a beautiful quarterly, and now they will be here with us for the first year.
That's so exciting.
So that's exciting.
Yeah. Our friends at Jari are releasing issue 2.
That should be a good
so
release,
Men plus Food plus Men.
Love seeing them and what they're doing. So,
and it's really cool because, like, you know, there's not too many stores that have a huge selection. A lot of these are just online only, and you wouldn't discover. It's like a great way to discover and to have that community of all the makers of these zines together. So
just, you know, shameless plug ahead, but foodbookfair.com, get your tickets to Foodioticals right now because they're going quickly.
Ooh.
And it is $8 for the best 4 hours of your life. You can get beer, wine, snacks, and
unlimited snacks,
very, very special surprises. So definitely grab your tickets and tell your friends to come.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's all taking place at the Wythe Hotel, we forgot to mention, in 2 weeks. Let's talk about that dinner, too. The dinner on April 30th?
Yeah, so that'll be our kickoff with Tables of Contents. One of my favorite puns. Tables of Contents, formerly known as Cooking by the Book, is an annual conceptual...
How many puns can we get in here?
I know, an annual conceptual literary dinner at Egg Restaurant.
Okay.
With the founding chef and owner George Weld and the chef Evan Hanser, and they cook from different works of literature every year. We've done The Sun Also Rises, To Kill a Mockingbird. This year will be Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston.
And these were chosen, I mean, they chose them, so I don't know if we can, like, put words in their mouth, but they're not necessarily food-driven narratives, right? So they're kind of like just taking these classics and recreating them through dinner.
Yeah, but it's like it's books where food plays a big part, even though the book is not about food.
Right.
And there's a lot of symbolism to the food that's in the books, or there are characters that are...
Oh, tea cake.
Tea cake.
Yeah.
And their eyes were watching God.
Really
so food
curious.
Is sort of a through line through these books that we've selected.
I'm dying to figure out what they're going to make for this dinner. Their eyes were watching God.
As soon as we find out, we'll definitely post that on our website and spread it around, but also
it'll probably be sold out by then, so
yeah,
you gotta get your ticket
even
now.
A bigger
go to foodbookfair.com. Yeah. You can get your tickets right now.
And I think with that, we'll take a quick little commercial interlude and be right back.
It's true, I could have done better, but I won't be bullied to fully take the blame. You came.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store, with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you.
All right, we're chatting again with Amanda Dell, Kim Cho from Food Book Fair, which is coming right up. Check out foodbookfair.com for the whole schedule of events, including the foodiaticals. We were talking about the dinner. But let's talk about some of the panels this year. So we have an interesting mix. Rather than, you know, talking about GMO food systems, there's a food and fashion panel. But it's not what you think. It's not like clothing fashion. What would you say this is sort of about?
About food and fashion and food as fashion. So sort of looking at how things become trendy, how things become popular or fashionable, whether that be kale salad, grass-fed meat, bone broth, bone marrow, remember bone marrow.
Greek yogurt.
And then sort of reconnecting these things that sort of exist as... items in a listicle or an online slideshow or an Instagram post to history, to food systems, to questions of food access, who can get Greek yogurt, who can get kale, to other connections in other cultures and other food ways and how they came to be on our plates.
So sort of like a
multi-layered look at what we talk about when we talk about eating certain things.
Yeah. I was at like a conference a couple weekends ago, and there was the founder of Sabra, or somebody from Sabra there, and he was talking about how, like, you know, 10, certainly 20 years ago, nobody ate hummus. Nobody knew what this grayish, pasty stuff was. Everyone's totally scared of it. Mm-hmm. And it really does change, you know, the whole industry of food, like Greek yogurt, for instance. You know, there's a lot of repercussions to the whey, and then, like, you know, stuff like when we change so rapidly and we become so dependent, or not dependent, but enamored by certain foods, it's like everything shifts a whole bunch. Everything shuffles around.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, I think in the ways that trends can, like the food culture side, can have major impact on the food system side is, I think in the last couple of years, there's been a fair amount of writing about quinoa in Bolivia and how quinoa has become so popular elsewhere in the world, specifically, we have it a lot in places where we eat here in Brooklyn, New York, that it has raised prices of quinoa in the places that it's grown, and it's harder for people...
I read something recently that said that was mostly a myth, though.
Oh, no!
There are concerns because, you know, a lot of these farmers are poor to begin with. but I read something that was like backpedaling mm-hmm. from that stance a little bit. Anyway,
I would love to read that story. Sorry.
You should invite originator of the avocado toast. I mean, it's just so interesting. Like one day,
toast.
I mean, toast in general, but.
Toast was not cool until, like, I don't know, all of a sudden it was cool.
Well,
like,
Toast everyone was calling Christini until 2 years ago.
That's true. It had an Italian slant to it.
And I think there's, like, a sort of, like, regional pride. Let's call it Toast again.
I remember joking about this with a friend,
and then suddenly everything was called Toast.
I mean, if you said to someone 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, what is avocado toast? Someone would probably be like, they would think maybe it was avocados that have been incorporated into like a bread dough. Not avocados.
I think it's avocados mushed into a toaster.
Right. It's an item that needs no explanation.
I know people who live off of that.
Right. Like, and it's just so fascinating when all of these things have come into our everyday life.
It's not just a food, it's a signifier at this point.
We've been talking a lot about cultural appropriation lately. I know Kim and I have had long conversations about this too, but it also plays into, you know, when everybody embraces a certain culture at once and it becomes trendy, there's a lot of stigma around that. From various different groups. I think that, you know, it comes with not just, let's say, physical or food, you know, production-based repercussions, but also, just a personal kind of, like, effects that can happen. So,
yeah, I mean, I think in some of the conversations that we've had off the radio about this is that, you know, in a world where information travels so quickly and trends travel so quickly, there can be a sort of flattening where when you eat something where there are references to other things or it was inspired by other cultures or it came from somewhere else, it's possible not to know where it came from or not to think about that or not to need to. And I think when there is a connection to another culture or another, ethnic food way or heritage or something like that, the stakes are that much higher. Mm-hmm. So when you're forgetting or you are making that history invisible and you're making the object just signifying something that's a signifier of a trend, then that can get a little murky and also hurtful for the people that... Where, you know,
but on the flip side, it's like we have trends. The trends are still going to happen. They're still going to go. They're still going to, you know, affect so many different things and groups and peoples. There's no stopping them. I wonder who starts trends. I guess we'll find that out at the panel.
I really hope we delve into because, I mean, the hummus was like the perfect example of something that hardly anyone was eating.
I also have to say, like, particularly right now, there's a huge sort of like Israeli food trend in restaurant food with like yodel. But I can't say the name. Yeah, yodel. And
would you call it Arab or Middle Eastern food? Big question.
Well, you know, there seems to be like a lot of times restaurants and chefs are often leading the way here, and it just came from left field, it seemed to me, because it wasn't seen as this. I don't know.
Right, here's the perfect
like
storm of
chef-y.
Why, yeah, because there was there was a big article in the Times like either last week about tahini and about one, there's this a new, I guess, maker of tahini in the Chelsea Market. I think it's called Seed and Mill.
Seed and Mill. They make halva.
Halva, but halva is made from tahini.
But I think they only sell halva. Then. It's a halva. They sell halva.
Oh, okay.
But then there's also people are obsessed with sumed tahini.
Right. So here's a perfect storm of why I think tahini-based products have crept closer into everyone's lives is because it's gluten-free.
Uh-huh.
Dairy-free.
Protein rich.
Vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of checks a lot of boxes of a food category that people you know, a vegan. Lot of people exactly, yeah. But also has like an unctuous, almost smoky, flavorful, very flavorful quality. And I think it's like someone just like saw that, their eyes were like wide open, and we're just like, wow, this is something that a lot of people can actually eat.
Well, in a word, it's kind of similar to like avocado, because it's like it's plant-based fats,
right?
Which people were like afraid of fattening things, like
very
coconut,
afraid.
For instance, mm-hmm. also, and nuts in general. Yeah.
So I think in terms of deliciousness, that was not mass marketed. There was a huge opportunity there, and I think people have been primed for foods involving sesame paste because of the popularity of Ottolenghi.
Mm-hmm.
Though I think there is a lot of conversation right now going on about, you know, what we, you know, going on about certain foods and whether we call it Mediterranean food or whether we call it Middle Eastern food or Arab food or Israeli food. And that can get very heated and very political.
Or we just call it food.
Oh, we can't just call it
food. So who's going to be on this panel about food and fashion?
On the panel, we're going to have John Gray, who's a co-founder of Ghetto Gastro, a culinary collective out of the Bronx that sort of blows up what the terms ghetto and what the term gastro mean.
Sweet.
Coel Tomei, who is the co-founder of Noosa Yogurt.
Uh-huh.
So we are going to talk a lot about
yogurt
trends. Yeah.
We're getting into yogurt.
Maria Rodel, who is the CEO of Rodel Inc., and has a book out about home cooking coming out soon called Scratch, but also is the daughter of the founder of the Rodale Institute, which they were talking about organic farming 50 years ago, which seems not that long, but also a really long time, and
way
also
back.
Way cool. back in ahead of the game.
OGs.
Christoph Hill.
Christoph Hill, who
nice.
Is the CFO
Fleischer's.
Of Fleischer's, but also was a partner in the dearly departed Northern Spy. But we were just there for a Fleischer's Burger pop-up. You still have 3 hours to go. Eat there right now if you want.
Get thee to the East Village.
Originator of the kale salad.
The ribboned kale salad
it's
in
a
2009.
Beautiful day for a Fleischer's Burger.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
And then Doria Santlofer, who's a food stylist that has styled all of the past covers of Cherry Bomb magazine.
Uh-huh.
But she also is helping see forth her late mother, Joy Santlofer's book, Food City, which is about the history of food and how we eat in New York City over the last 400
awesome.
Years. So she has a very interesting perspective on that, having worked on that project, but also seeing food literally creep into fashion shoots.
Wow. Yeah. So there is
It's a lot
fashion.
Of people.
Wow.
I think that's everybody,
yeah,
right?
Kim and I haven't done
and No Effects.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Who's one of our favorite photographers, the author of The Way We Eat, The Way We Ate. And he also actually teaches a class about the you know, parallel evolution of food photography and fashion photography.
Brilliant.
Which I hope to audit next.
I love how, like, every time these, like, panels are happening, I just, like, want them to keep going on and, like, continue having these conversations because, like, obviously there's so many different sides to it. Like, something like food and fashion and trends could go on for a while.
So. Yeah, it's obviously not just, like, an hour conversation with Q&A. So, I mean, that's partly what we're trying to do as we continue to develop Food Book Fair, have more calendar year programming, more events, more workshops where people can kind of get a hands-on literal.
And that's a new thing too, right?
Yeah. Awesome. I think we talked about that a little bit.
Yeah.
So like we had a panel about visual culture and food photography last year, and then this year we're doing a workshop on food styling and food photography, and then also a workshop about visual storytelling specifically for social media for brands. Because you can listen to someone talk about this for an hour, which is really inspiring. But there are some people that will want to learn how to do specific things in specific ways, and you can take
a
class.
So this could be like Food Book Fair, like EDU.
Yep, school's in session at Food Book Fair, Monday the 2nd.
I can't wait to keep tuned into that. And maybe like food writing workshop classes, that could be really fun too.
Yeah.
I guess that's about all the time we have, but I guess one last plug on that note. Do also check out the Food and Fiction panel on Sunday, May 1st. Yours truly will be moderating a few guests that I am really excited to speak to on the topic of food as reflected in their fiction. It seems like a burgeoning genre, which I've spoken with many guests on this show about. So hopefully it should be interesting. Thanks for letting me do that, guys.
Our pleasure. We're so excited to have you.
You guys are like, about that. Yeah. No. Nothing to say about that.
We're really excited for that.
No, everyone better read up before Food Book Fair. Yeah. That's what we have to say.
Like, then we can write our collective book, The Double Eight at Jean Georges.
We're living that book, just so you know. Okay. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. Definitely check out foodbookfair.com. And even if you can't make it or if it's sold out, you know, look forward to the events throughout the year. I'm really excited about those, too. Yeah.
Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you so much for having us, Kathy.
Thank you, Amanda and Kim.
See you at the fair.
Yeah, we'll see you at the fair.
And see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Ooh, I like the way you do.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.